You're listening to the Barry Egan Tapes on News Talk. I'm Barry Egan from the Sunday Independent, and I'm talking with Marty Whelan. Marty, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure, Barry. Pleasure.
You went to school with a fella called Gerry Ryan.
Yeah.
What was he like?
He was swotty where I wasn't. But he did what we all do, particularly when you get older in school, because you start messing. And so he, like me, he'd mess. Trick was, he was going home when he was studying. I was going home when I was continuing to mess. Yeah. And I was listening to radio at night time when I'd be at home, because I convinced my parents, this is the joy of being an only child, I convinced your parents that listening to music would be helpful when you're studying. So I used to have Radio Luxembourg in the headphones.
What were you listening to?
Radio Luxembourg.
No, but like,
Brendan Balfe or whatever, Larry Gogan, you know. But I was into rock music when I was in school.
But so you said once that you used to loan Gerry an album and you never got it back.
Never got it back. And he also had a tape. We were in a little band, a lot of us together, and we had a tape. And I definitely gave it to Gerry because nobody else has admitted to ever having it. And I remember him listening to it. And I don't know whatever happened to it. It was a school band, but we played like Pink Floyd and stuff. But Gerry was a cool guy. Gerry was very cool.
You said he was great fun, but there was always a bit of madness about him.
There was, yeah. He was always kind of a bit, you know, he's always a bit on the edge, which I wasn't. And I kind of
why
thought
was
a great thing. I think he was just, it was just him.
But why?
But his
why,
brother Mano would be like that, you know, and his brother Michael would be a bit like that. Their mother had a theatrical background. She was like, you would call down to the house. Like, his dad was a dentist. He was a very straight man, his dad, very fine fellow, but you go down. And his mum was very theatrical. She was part of the Burke family. As a result, I think the theatre played a part in just how they were. And I think that was just Gerry's way.
And was there any talking to him? Like,
but he wasn't a bad thing.
But near the end, when you saw that he...
Well, I saw him not too long before he went. And he just didn't look well. He just didn't look well. But you see, he was living, I suppose you'd say he was living a high life. He was having a great time. He was enjoying life. He was loving it. And that's fine. I didn't socialise with Gerry for a long time.
And when the allegations of cocaine use came out, were you shocked?
I was totally surprised. Totally surprised. Because I'd never witnessed anything like that. I hadn't socialised with him, so I wouldn't have witnessed anything anyway, had there been anything to witness. But I never, no, never. So I was very shocked with that, very much so.
Yeah.
I just thought he was having a good time. Like the rest of us, I would like a glass of red, he would like a whiskey. I thought, well, he's having a good time, he's enjoying himself. But, you know, c'est la vie. Yeah. A good guy who went far too young. Because I mean, apart from his evident radio talent, he was great bloody company. He was a great guy to be with. He'd tell you stories, half of them would be true.
Yeah.
It was to go home and pick through the stories and try and figure them out, or ring more and say, did that happen? So, yeah, I was very fond of him.
But,
we spent a lot of time.
What age were you when your father died? Was it 98? Or?
My father died in 1998, yeah. And I'm 1956 baby. So it was a very strange thing for me, because when my dad died, being an only child, you have this bond with your parents, if you're lucky, and I did. So when he died, we became my mother's minder.
Yeah.
Because
you
suddenly
and Maria.
Maria, my wife, because mum became this lone person and not a young woman either. So yeah, she became our responsibility, another child to mind. But she wasn't a child. She was a very together woman. She lived on her own until 6 months before she died. And she was 95 when she died. So like, she,
and did
she
you get your sunny disposition from both your parents?
Both of them, yeah. Both.
He worked in Cleary's.
He worked in Cleary's for 36 years. He was selling shirts. And then he moved into, for those who remember Are You Being Served, he became Captain Peacock. He would walk around dispensing largesse and kindness.
And your mother worked in Cassidy's.
Yeah, which is not far from where we are now. No one remembered Cassidy's, perhaps. But Cassidy's was a great, great ladies' department store. And she was in there. She was a buyer. And she loved... So that's where I got my clothes thing from, because the two of them were in the rag trade, if you will. And they were very particular about how you looked and all the rest of it. And most of us don't wear ties most of the time anymore. My dad would say, I'll show you how to make a Windsor knot in the tie. And I would make one. And I've never remembered it since.
Well, your mother, was it 2015 when she died, was it?
Yeah.
And you were with your father when he died and with your mother when you died. You saw both
14,
your parents.
She's gone 5 years.
You saw both your parents out.
I saw both my parents out. And my mother lived with us for the last 6 months of her life. And we looked after her. She wasn't well at all. But until the 6 months before she got sick, she was living alone in her own house. Astonishing woman. Watching the TV and doing the crossword and taking the Indo and doing all the things that people do. She was an incredible woman. I was very close to both of them, very close.
You brought her to the hospital when she had the stroke?
Oh, yeah, she had a...
You held her hand?
Had her hand. We were with her right up to... My wife and my Jessica and Thomas, my children, were with her when she went, which was very special. And we were heartbroken. She was an astonishing woman. She was a great supporter of mine.
And very protective
letters,
as well, wasn't
very
she?
Very protective, oh yeah. The letters that
you found after she died, you found the letters she'd written to RTE.
Indeed.
asking them to reinstate you.
Indeed, and some of them were less than kind to some individuals. And rightly so, she had every right.
Yeah.
But she did, she wrote some letters, and some of the things, and she didn't say anything libelous, but she would say what she felt. In other words, she wrote down exactly her thoughts. She didn't try to defend them. She just said, look, I think this is unreasonable.
And why didn't she? She was demanding that you get your job back after.
Yeah, but I was telling her, I was saying, don't send them, Mammy. Please, for God's sake, don't send them. Because, you know, I didn't think it would necessarily be wise. Maybe she should have. Maybe I would have got back on radio quicker. I don't know. Doesn't matter. But at the time, I felt, ma'am, please don't send those letters. I think it did her good, though, to get it off her chest.
She was minding her baby, wasn't she?
She was minding her baby. It also got it off her chest, you know, because my mother had, like, an altar to me at home. Let's not fool ourselves here. You know, the guides, all the RT guides are all up on the wall. And she would keep bits of paper.
It was like the cult of Marty, wasn't it?
Indeed. Many a Barry Egan interview has been preserved, as it were, and I have them if you want to have a look at them at some of your earlier work. But she kept all this stuff. So I have these bags of things to do with my career that I knew about but kind of half didn't. But she kept it all. But that's what I suspect a woman who has one child, who has a public persona, if you will, and she cherished that and she loved it and followed it closely. And any slight would be...
She was very hurt by that.
She was very hurt, yeah. She wouldn't have that.
How would you explain that to her?
How would I explain?
Well,
if you get a bad review, I mean, look, you know, you reach a stage in your career where you really couldn't be bothered, quite frankly, at a certain stage in your career where reviews come in. Because you reach a point, you go, oh, for God's sake. Because, you know, you've survived as long as you have and you've done what you've done and you've achieved a little along the way. But along that route, reviews would come and she'd get upset if she saw them. So I'd try and protect her and keep them from
her.
And
did your father live to see you become famous? Well?
Yes, he did. He lived for a good while with that. He wasn't so keen on the business initially because he couldn't understand how anybody would pay me more than the PMPA.
Yeah.
And I was kept explaining to him, no, the PMPA, that'd be a proper job. This is something I just really want to do. He couldn't get it. My mum got it immediately.
Yeah.
My father couldn't put his hand on that. Old school, you know, he was in this job for all these years. And that was obviously the way it was for him and for his generation.
But you seem to be, like, and rightly so, devastated when he passed. Like,
I was devastated when both of them passed.
Was it true that when your dad died, you spent the whole couple of days listening to Van's album?
Van's music has helped me tremendously in all manner of things in my life, particularly with my parents' illness and death. The spiritual side of Van, and I love all that. Songs like Across the Bridge Where Angels Dwell, Into the Mystic. There are so many songs of Van's that have helped me through. There's a song called See Me Through on the Enlightenment album.
Was that you read that at your dad's funeral?
I did read it at my dad's funeral because it resonated with me. See me through when things get heavy on my mind. See me through the days of wines and roses. Beautiful lyrics. And Van did that for me, unconsciously, obviously. But it connected with me. And I played his music day and night in the car. You know, the 5-CD player in the car. And Van. And it helped me greatly, yes, on both occasions. But then I feel some connection with Van that I can't quite explain. I just adore what he does.
Are you drawn to him? The dark side that Van seems to be.
No, I'm not a dark side. No, well, you mean a spiritual side? No, you mean an inquiring mind about...
Yeah,
about,
but also that...
Well, I suppose we all are. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've just found out from Stephen Hawking that there's no God. So
yeah,
time is moving on. This is a bit of a shock. I have to sit down and take this one in. So I'm drawn to... I have great faith. I have never lost my faith. I lost my faith in the church from time to time, but never in a God, a being, and that belief...
Did you draw on
naively
that?
...naively that I will see my parents again.
Like, what made your mother angry was you obviously left RTE, went to Century, didn't work out, and then things like you were effectively on the dole and you were public figure.
I was factually on the dole.
Oh, factually on the dole.
Yeah.
But like, if you'd worked in the PMPA...
Nothing would have happened.
You'd have just lost your job and you'd find somewhere else.
That's absolutely right.
You're a public figure.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But in this instance, you take a punt and you don't know if it's going to work. I mean, the people who were involved in Century, people like Oliver Barry, Terry Wogan, Christopher Burke, there were people involved who seemed to have a very good plan. You don't go if you don't think it's a good plan. They convince you it's a good plan. You take a chance. It was too early. It was whatever it was. But at the time, you think, I'm with 2FM, 10 years, I'll take a punt on this. And you go. And the point is, had I stayed, I don't know how my career would have gone. I don't know if I would have had the opportunities had I stayed. But when I came back, television was not a problem. Radio was a problem for many years. And in terms of TV, I came back thanks to the intercession of people like Liam Miller and various people. So I got back into television fairly lively.
Yeah.
But the radio was a real problem.
From reading your book and other stuff, there seemed to be a lot.
It's a fine read and keenly priced currently.
That's life, yeah, buy it for Christmas.
Indeed.
But there seemed to be an element of, in RT, of, if you pardon the French, fuck him, almost.
Well, never to your face, of course, but I think, yeah, I mean, but there were individuals.
But almost close enough, individuals who said to you, you're a 1980s DJ.
1980s DJ, that's right, you remember that quote. And somebody did say that to me. And somebody else said at a meeting, who would you like me to fire? On the basis that I would be coming back, which I thought was a lovely line. So there are many lines that are filed for the second book. But what basically happened there was there were individuals who were bitter and couldn't understand the fact that you made a commercial decision to try and do something. Yes, you could look back at it with hindsight and say, well, times were different. Why did they feel the way they felt at the time? I don't know.
But you told Ryan Tubridy in an interview that you were told, we don't care, effectively.
Well, I mean, that was the attitude that was that prevailed. It was good looking, see you, thank you. But again, not in television, which is the interesting thing. But the individuals who were making those decisions clearly are not making decisions anymore and haven't for quite some time. Yeah. But those individuals had, I don't know what the bitterness was. What I found particularly fascinating was, at the time, a number of the individuals I'm talking about, I'm not going to name for obvious reasons, some of them not even with us anymore, were friendly with a number of people who were part of the Century setup, who seemed to have no problem socialising with these people, being with these people, or indeed helping them out when the time came later on. I seem to be the problem.
But wasn't that, I don't know if it was in your book, but there was an implication that you were the Pied Piper of this mini revolt to Century.
Well, that proved to be a bit of a misnomer, didn't it? What a great idea that wasn't. I mean, at the time, yeah, but you forget Richard Crowley. You forget Claire McKeown. You know what I mean? There are other people who also joined the fray and went out there to give it. David Davenport,
yeah,
who returned to RTÉ, if you might recall, as the chief political correspondent, having been head of news at Century Radio. I merely leave that sit for where it is. But I mean, you know, and a lovely guy.
So how come you weren't?
That's my point.
And how do you explain it? Explained it in the you said in the book that was it was the worst moment of your life.
Oh, it was horrendous, because don't forget, if you recall, and you mentioned the book, at that period we had Jessica, our little girl.
What age was she?
She was it was 1991. She was two, was she? Was she two? Was she even two? She was born in 1990, so I'm trying to remember. It was 91. What was that like?
You had a crying baby.
Crying baby.
You were going down to the dole
office, the wife.
And you decided not to sign on because you couldn't.
I walked around. I was petrified. I couldn't go in. And eventually you pluck up the courage, I got in touch with me, and then I went in because I had to go in. But we had a baby, and I found myself the morning after Century died, there was a crew outside the door interviewing me about how I felt, wondering how I felt, and there was a couple of newspapers at the door taking pictures. I mean, it was, you know, it was very, very difficult.
It was like
time.
A public execution.
It was, yeah.
Queuing up to film it.
But journalist job is a journalist job. I don't have to tell Barry Egan what that means. And therefore, I understood. But not at the time, you don't.
I wouldn't be outside
your door. You know what I mean? At the time, you don't understand it, but you do later because you go, oh, yeah, okay. Because it's a news story.
What was it like for Maria?
Awful. Awful. You know, we'd walk the beach and try and figure out what the next move was, and would I go away? Would that be the best thing to do? What way to play this? Because you're not sure what level of worth you have within the industry when something like this happens. You know, Century wasn't a disaster. Some people seem to have painted it as such. It wasn't.
You mentioned Jerry Ryan earlier. Did he give you any advice? Look, just stay calm and come.
Well, yeah, but good people like Jerry and a number of other individuals would have been on. You find out who your friends are real quick. You know, I remember the people who never rang again. I remember the people who were on like a light, the surprising people who rang.
Can you name the surprising people who were on?
Well, in television, for example, there were people who rang, people like Ian McGarry, people like Bill Keating. These are producers, directors. Moy Doherty was somebody who rang and wished me well and said, look, you know.
And that helped you?
Of course it did, because you knew that there were people who said, you've done nothing wrong here. You took a punch, you went, and it didn't happen. Okay. So I was very fortunate that there were those who would ring and say, we wish you well, and if there's anything I can do, and whatever. And I had friends in the music industry, some who did, some who didn't. And that's very important.
Because it was good for your mental health.
Of course it was.
I wasn't in a great shape.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's like a lot of things. If you're out of the limelight, the tickets stop, the records stop, the invites stop, the stuff stops. And you have been doing this for years.
And what did you learn about yourself? I mean, because did you think you're...
Resilience.
Yeah.
You know,
that you're Marty the person.
That you're Marty the person.
Not necessarily the other person.
Yeah, and that you can turn the corner and suddenly it's all over. And I have been very fortunate.
And if it was all over, what were you going to do?
I don't know, is the first answer to that. I did contemplate the UK and I did meet some people over there and it didn't work out. But I wasn't sure. But I was very fortunate that here, that television took me back within a short space of time and I slowly started to build up something.
Was that open house?
I'll tell you what it was. The telethon, do you remember the telethons was on? And the producer was Moya Doherty. And the presenter, of course, was Gay Byrne. And I was behind a door to present Gay with a cheque to do with something, a charity, obviously, that I had been associated with. And Gay opened the door and went, "Look who it is." Now, there's no better informator in the world than that. And I presented Kay with the cheque and whatever. So slowly but surely, these moments started to happen. There was a great guy called Noel Smith, who ran daytime television, you know, Live at 3 and all these programs, who took me under his wing and he was very kind to me. And again, he saw that there could be something that could expand the afternoons, which eventually led to Open House with the great Mary Kennedy, who has been with you. Another book. How many books has she written now? She's about 17, I think, at this stage. She's getting as bad as Nevin. But she's gorgeous. But that, so that path led to working with Mary on a full-time basis in the afternoon, which was terrific. But that TV, I survived in television alone, which is not that common. There's a few people, like Dahi's doing it now, there's a few people now. But at the time, to just be in TV wasn't that common. So I was lucky that work came.
So you were back in TV, but were they chopping in?